I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie revealed last week that he had had gastric lap band surgery a few months ago that was a secret until the New York Post broke the story. It didn't take too long until politicos were asking, did he do it because he wanted to run for president in 2016 and being obese would hurt his chances? Christie said it was about turning 50 and wanting to be there for his children. The surgery involves placing a band around the stomach to shrink its size so a person eats less and loses weight. We were curious about Christie's decision, what this surgery entails, and why weight loss is so difficult for so many people. We begin our conversation with Matt Katz. He's a staff writer for the South New Jersey Bureau of the Philadelphia Inquirer, and his blog is Christie Chronicles. And Matt Katz, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure, Marty.
Did you have any idea that Governor Christie was getting this procedure until last week?
Well, I noticed that he had been losing a little bit of weight. I see him on average in person about once a week, and I think that's the right amount of time to notice the few pounds that you can lose per week. So I had the sense, I just wasn't able to prove it. The New York Post did. They had some sort of tip from somebody apparently in New York, and then they went to Christie with their information.
And I read that he'd had the surgery in February. It looks like he lost maybe about 30 or 40 pounds. So even someone of that size, you could see some of the difference?
I could. And he wouldn't say how much he lost. This was what sources told the New York Post. He's never said how much he weighs. He's never said how much he fluctuates. And he stuck with that last week when he acknowledged the surgery.
Well, there was a press conference, yes. And was it all about this surgery that he had had?
He answered questions for about 40 minutes only on this. They had scheduled it hastily after the Post story, and he answered questions ad nauseum. I mean, there were more than 20 cameras there from all over the place. Inside Edition, the gossip entertainment TV station was there. It was something extraordinary.
And what were the questions? I mean, was it just all the sort of typical questions one would expect?
Right. And then people wanted to know what the secret name he used when he checked into the hospital, because he went in under a assumed identity, and wanted to know details of why he didn't disclose it in the past and why he hadn't disclosed it when it happened. But the predominant question was, does this mean you're running for president?
And what was his response?
And he said it's purely to do with his family, and that he's got four kids. He wants to see grandkids, and he knew he needed to do this for his health. However, this certainly, if it works to some degree, could alleviate some concerns that politicos have had that he was too heavy to win in a national election.
Did he reveal the name that he used to go into the hospital?
He would not.
but he did use a name.
He did use an assumed name. We can guess what that name might be. I have no idea.
Something very New Jersey, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Right.
And did he say why he didn't say anything about this? I mean, which is perhaps a more serious question.
He decided it was personal, but if he was asked about it, he wouldn't lie about it. He said he only told his chief of staff, his chief counsel, and his family.
Right.
There was some issue with the lieutenant governor. He was under anesthesia for 40 minutes, and he did not tell her, and she did not take over the state and formally while he was under. And there were some questions about that, but he dismissed those as ridiculous.
Which sounds very Christie-like.
Yes, he often dismisses things as ridiculous.
Yes, he does. Is this an issue, though, do you think, for people in New Jersey, the fact that they have an obese governor?
It's not. There was a poll out saying that most New Jerseyans don't care about the weight of their governor and whatnot, and that seems to have been the case. However, when you're dealing with running for president, he's still considered among the very few handful of Republicans who could win a primary in 2016. There's concerns about health, and you know, you have the guy who's got his finger on the button. How healthy is he? And there's always issues with health. I mean, there were issues with health with Bob Dole when he was old, and John McCain was on the older side. So that's really where it comes into play. There's not as much concern about health when it comes to a governor.
What's interesting, and I think it was the New York Times talking about Christie and his weight, saying it was part of his brand. I mean, that it's part of his personality. It's part of his political persona.
Sure. I mean, I think that to some extent he gets away with being as sort of brusque and in your face and tell it like it is, because it seems to fit with his body. I mean, his personality and his body seem to fit. And because of that, there's an authenticity there. People feel like it's real. And so there is a connection. But, you know, regardless of how this plays out, I don't imagine he'd be stick thin. So I don't think this is going to affect that.
What I think is interesting, a couple of years ago, Mike Huckabee, who had political and presidential aspirations, lost, I think, 100 pounds. Haley Barbour, who considered a run for the presidency or certainly a run for national office, apparently lost, you know, 20, 30, 40 pounds as well. That seems to be something that people do when they consider higher office.
Yes, it is. And it'll be interesting to see how much he continues to talk about this or maybe use this as a way of connecting with people going forward. Last week he said, I'm not talking about this anymore. This is my one press conference. We're done. But he since has called into a program that Politico was doing down in D.C. to talk about it. He was on Rock Center with Brian Williams on Friday in a program talking about it. And apparently he's going to be at a book signing. Mika from Morning Joe wrote a book about weight, and he's going to her book signing tomorrow. And presumably, possibly, might be talking about this. So he might be conflicted in this regard. He doesn't want to distract from everything else about him, but it's also something of interest to people. And it also could be politically beneficial if people see are able to relate to him better because of it.
And relate to his struggle because we'll be talking about later in the show about the fact that so many people in this country are not just overweight, but are really obese.
Right.
And whether, not to sound crassly political here, but whether that could be an asset for him,
and
his struggle.
It could be. And even if people are an obese, the overeating and struggling with weight is a nearly universal issue. So, sure. But he is not that eager to, he's never been that eager to talk about it. I mean, he went on Letterman and shared a donut with him, and he's played it for laughs, but he's also expressed reluctance to continue to ask questions and give details about his struggle.
What's a typical diet when someone is running for office?
I mean, it's whatever you can grab a hold of. I mean, if you're in Iowa in February and you're waking up at 4 a.m. to drive 2 hours in a bus, I mean, there's not a lot available. So candidates constantly talk about the difficulty of eating right on the campaign trail.
And I'm assuming reporters covering them as well probably have some of the same issues.
Probably worse. we don't have aides who can fetch us an apple
or something like that.
Exactly.
You were telling us actually that last week there was a journalist roast in New Jersey, and Governor Christie was there. How much did this lap band surgery come up?
Yeah, well, we had to make a call an audible and add some jokes in because it happened the same day as the surgery he announced the surgery. So it did come up. I made one joke saying that referencing Bruce Springsteen, Christie's favorite singer and rock hero. I said Springsteen's no longer the band closest to the governor's heart.
Ka-ching. Yeah. Good for you. And were there laughs all around?
There were laughs, and there were a couple of other jokes and songs about his surgery, and he acknowledged it, and he was in good humor about it.
You had a piece in the Inquirer yesterday, your blog, the Christie Chronicles, about him being really a bona fide celebrity.
It's incredible, and it was really exemplified by last week and the coverage this got. I think if this was an overweight senator from Illinois, we wouldn't have seen the sort of national coverage. I mean, there were 20-plus news cameras at his press conference. As I said, like Inside Edition and gossip sites were covering this. TMZ was all over this story. And it shows that he's really like crossed a boundary of just a politician into something beyond. And he's now partially famous for being famous. People know Chris Christie, but know him as being the guy who got the lap band surgery, the guy who maybe yelled at somebody on the Jersey Shore boardwalk, but don't know anything about his policies or his politics. And that's, I think, unusual for somebody of the chief executive of the 11th biggest state. He's not president, which is a position that will naturally lend you to celebrity. So it's a new kind of thing, and it's in part because of the way his communications people know how to work the 21st century media cycle, but it's also because of his personality.
Yeah, and it's a big personality. I mean, not to belabor that word in this hour, but he has an outsized personality.
He does. He walked onto the floor of the Republican convention pumping his fists, and his jacket was flying, and we had a huge picture on the front page that day that kind of exemplified him in many ways.
And a couple minutes before we have to say goodbye to you, Matt, but I guess getting back to Chris Christie, he's a Republican in a very blue state, which is an interesting political mix there.
He is. His positions, particularly on social issues, are not in line with most New Jersey voters, but Democrats and independents, his likability level is so high that at least at this point, he is far ahead, 20, 30 points ahead of the expected Democratic candidate, Barbara Buono. He's up in November, and so far it hasn't been much of a fight.
And is it because he's such a joisy guy?
People relate to him. I hear all the time, I disagree with him, but I like him. And, you know, it's the old adage about running for president. Who would you rather have a beer with? Right. At this point, there are a lot of New Jerseyans, even if they disagree with him on abortion and gay marriage and taxes and everything else, they want to have a beer with him.
Do you think Hurricane Sandy, though, cemented that support for Christie, at least so far?
I think among Democrats who might have been concerned that he was too conservative or too Republican, once they saw him embrace Obama, those sort of fears that he was some far-right Republican were quelled, and now they're comfortable with him. I mean, his approval ratings after Sandy were just absurdly high, and they've come back down to earth a little bit, but he's still enjoying a Sandy bounce, and he talks about Sandy all the time, and first commercial didn't specifically reference Sandy, but there were many images of him on the shore after Sandy. It was clear what the implication was. He wants to remind people of that.
And including the little vest jacket thing that he was wearing. The fleece.
Yes,
exactly.
The famous Saturday Night Live fleece. That was also referenced many times during the roast this last week.
And there is that image, too, of the rotund governor of New Jersey and that very tall and skinny president on the beach together.
Right. The Daily News headline that day was Through Thick and Thin.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
It was fun, Marty. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Matt Katz is a staff writer for the South New Jersey Bureau of the Philadelphia Inquirer. His blog is Christie Chronicles. We'll be talking with Thomas Wadden, director of the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders at the University of Pennsylvania, talking about this lap band surgery and also why losing weight is so difficult for so many people. And we do want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Lodge Lane Assisted Living supports WHYY. Lodge Lane is now accepting reservations for their new facility located near Wilmington, Delaware. Guided by time-honored Jewish traditions and values, Lodge Lane welcomes residents of all faiths in a supportive, friendly environment with round-the-clock staffing to assist with daily tasks. Featuring a variety of floor plans and amenities that include kosher and non-kosher dining and a secure memory wing. More at 302-764-7000 or lodgelane.org.
You decide the winners at WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs, June 20th at WHYY in Philadelphia. Food fanatics will love this two-hour tasting, featuring an array of mouth-watering munchies served up by local restaurants and businesses, all competing to be named 2013's Best of the Chefs, with summer beer garden, specialty cocktails, and live music. WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs. Tickets at whyy.org/events.
When it comes to writing personal lyrics, Kevin Parker of Tame Impala has a novel strategy. you know, pretty self-conscious when it comes to writing lyrics, so I kind of just pretend that it's someone else, and that kind of gets me to the other side.
Tune in for the explosive psychedelic rock of Tame Impala this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Joining us now is Thomas Wadden. He's the Albert J. Stunkard Professor of Psychology and Director of the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, here to talk about losing weight and also what this procedure Chris Christie had a couple of months ago, what that entails. And Thomas Wadden, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
Do you think, though, Governor Christie has performed a public service in that he has a weight problem. He's a very high-profile figure. He has had this procedure, obviously a sign that he wants to lose weight and has struggled with weight for a lot of his adult life.
He's performed many public services, and this may be another one. Clearly, I think that he's shown that he's concerned about his health. He wants to improve his weight and his health. And on that, I certainly congratulate the governor and think this could help other people decide, well, maybe it's time for me to do something about my weight. I may not be getting lap band surgery, but perhaps trying to lose a few pounds by diet and exercise or other methods.
And what does this surgery entail, lap band surgery? What does it entail?
Well, in lap band, the surgeon places an inflatable band right below the esophagus at the very top of the stomach. And think of this like a long cylindrical balloon, as if you put a rubber band around the top of the balloon. You'd create a very small pouch at the top that would be separate from the remainder of the balloon. And there's a small opening between the small pouch now created by the band and the rest of the stomach. That opening is called a stoma. So what the lap band does, it restricts how much you can eat. If you've got a very small pouch equal to about 1 ounce, just 1 ounce, that's all you can eat at any given time.
Wow.
And then this small little narrow opening lets the food slowly pass into the larger stomach. So that is the procedure, and you can adjust the size of the band by putting saline in it, just basically water in it, to make that stoma smaller or larger.
And the idea is by literally shrinking the size of the stomach, less food, and therefore weight loss.
Correct. This is called a restrictive procedure. It restricts how much you can eat. And as I say, you can only eat about 1 ounce to 1.5 ounces of food at a time, so you can't sit down and have a Thanksgiving meal when you have a lap band. And people end up eating multiple small meals per day rather than just having, you know, 3 square meals per day. You just can't eat the same volume of food. So you will lose weight just by eating less, by restricting your calories.
What are the risks associated with this procedure?
Well, the lap band is among the safest of the bariatric surgery procedures. There are 3 very popular procedures, and first lap band, then second gastric bypass, and third is called gastrectomy, where you actually remove part of the stomach. The lap band is the safest. There's a recent study done looking at 1,200 people had the lap band at specialty clinics. There was not a single death there. So that's the good news. With the other two procedures, you may have approximately 1 out of 300 to 1 out of 500 people die within 30 days of the procedure. So it's a safe procedure. Probably the biggest risk from lap band are those that you'll see people are going to have trouble adjusting to it. If you eat too much food, you regurgitate. You throw up initially.
Oh, really? You can't
hold the food down, so it's going to come back up. So that's the first thing you have to get accustomed to. Other things that happen with lap band, if you eat a lot of meat, the meat can get sort of caught or plugged in the opening, the stoma that goes from the small pouch into the big stomach. The long-term complications of lap band typically are the band starts to slip or it erodes, and you have to go in and to fix it, repair it. That'll be a problem. There are always risks in any kind of procedure where you're having anesthesia, you're lying on a table, that you could have a blood clot. It's uncommon, though, during the lap band, just because this is, again, a very quick procedure. You can usually be finished with this in about an hour.
How invasive is the surgery?
The surgery is done laparoscopically, and laparoscopically means that the surgeon makes four or five small incisions and then puts in ports, sort of small tubes, through which the surgeon then puts instruments. The first instrument you put in is a tiny camera with a light on it, so it illuminates the abdominal cavity and you can see the stomach. And then you have another instrument you put through another port, and that allows you to put the lap band around the top of the stomach. So it's a remarkably safe procedure, and as I said, done very quickly, far less complicated than the other forms of gastric bypass or gastrectomy.
And can you live your whole life with that, or do people have it removed, or what happens to this lap band over time?
Well, typically the lap band is intended to be a permanent procedure, that you're going to continue to have it, so you're going to have that small 1 ounce, 1.5 ounce pouch to help you eat less food. And so that is going to be your new lifestyle. You're always going to be in a situation when you eat, you're going to chew your food repeatedly. I mean, when you first start out, you're encouraged to chew each mouthful of food 20, 25 times to make sure it's very fine and that you can, in fact, pass it into the little pouch and then there through the opening to the larger stomach. So this is a lifestyle change. In some ways, I'm a behavioral psychologist, and I'm always trying to get people to change their behavior. The lap band and these other procedures force you to eat in a different fashion, to eat more slowly, to chew your food more thoroughly. So that hopefully will be a continued process. Most people do not have the band taken out unless it does start to slip, to erode, unfortunately, sort of fold into the stomach. So I have seen cases in which it is reversed and taken out. We should talk about the weight losses with the lap band.
That was my next question. Yeah. Next question. No, go ahead.
And I should note that most of what I'm telling you I've learned from my chief surgeon at the Hospital University of Pennsylvania, who is Dr. Noel Williams. So thank you to Dr. Williams. Most persons who have a lap band are going to lose about 20% of their initial body weight, and they'll do so slowly. So they will lose at a rate of about 2 to 3 pounds initially, and then after they've lost weight for the first 4 to 6 months, their rate will slow down more. And then they'll plateau at about a 20 to 22% weight loss, somewhere around 18 to 24 months. Hmm. And if you weigh 200 pounds, you'd lose 40 pounds. So you might still well be overweight. If you weighed 300 pounds, you'd lose about 60 pounds. So again, you'd still be overweight. And that's frustrating and disappointing for many people. You know, everybody would like to be down to sort of their bathing suit size. And that is why some individuals will choose the more aggressive procedure, which is the gastric bypass. And with that operation, you will lose about 30 to 35% of your weight. So if you're a 300-pounder, you'd lose about 100 pounds. With all these procedures, patients are going to hit their maximum weight loss at about 18 months to 24 months. Then they will, in fact, regain a bit of weight after that point.
And is that just the body adjusting? Because I'm trying to imagine, you know, 1.5 ounces of food, is that a little tiny bowl of pasta? I don't even know how that translates into a meal.
It translates into very small meals.
And like snack-type meals in a way?
To begin with, for certain. What happens, though, is that the little pouch you create, the 1.5 pouch, does stretch out some. And some patients are going to expand the pouch and, in fact, undo the benefits because they're just putting too much food into the pouch. So what you're asking really is, well, how do you keep the weight down? And you have to continue to eat small amount of food. Many people who have had these operations are thought to eat about 1,200 to 1,500 calories a day indefinitely after they've been successful with the weight loss.
And a typical calories is what, closer to 2,000?
Well, for a female, an average weight female would have about 1,700 calories a day, an average weight male about 2,500 calories a day. And so, yes, you are going to be consuming fewer calories than you did previously before you went on this procedure, and it may well be below the calories that the average weight person is eating.
And that's Thomas Wadden. He's the Albert J. Stunkard Professor of Psychology and Director of the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Joining us today on Radio Times as we begin our conversation, talking about the fact that last week New Jersey Governor Chris Christie revealed that he had had lap band surgery to help him lose weight. We've been talking with Dr. Wadden about what this surgery entails. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9 1-888-477-4499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'll be talking later in the show about just the difficulty of losing weight in this country. Joining us now is Margaret Bonafide, and she's a multimedia journalist at the Asbury Park Press, and she wrote recently about her own gastric band surgery for the Asbury Park Press. And Margaret, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
You had this lap band surgery in October. How are you doing?
I am doing well. And as I had written in my first person piece, I actually have a band over a bypass. 11 years ago, I had the gastric bypass, lost 180 pounds, and regained about, after many years, regained about 80, 90 pounds of that. So I was in a position I wanted to do what I could to abate that, and I had gone to Weight Watchers, and I had gone to a lot of different programs, and I had also my insurance company had a very big push to be much more healthy, and I wanted to see a nutritionist, but they told me I could not unless I was diabetic, and I'm not diabetic.
No,
I don't want to wait to that point. So I looked into the gastric band and and I had it done. And I told very few people. I told very few people about it. I told a few family members, not all of them, a few coworkers, and then I just after the governor came out, I came out completely.
Well, and I'm curious, Margaret, why you kept it secret?
You know, and the governor hit the nail on the head. It's nobody's business, you know. I really didn't think, one of the things about being morbidly obese is that I'll speak in terms of myself.
Sure.
I felt like a failure. I felt that I couldn't do what other people seem to easily do. And, there's so much discrimination against obese people. And that was one of the reasons I decided to come out and be open about my procedure. And not that I wanted to, but, I just thought it's an important topic. And if I can help somebody else, I would, but I have to say about my experience, it is not just about limiting the size of your stomach, because what the gastric band has done for me is I can't binge. I can't eat massive amounts of food. It just is uncomfortable, and then, you have to relieve yourself of it somehow. But I could still graze all day long on high-calorie foods. I could eat candy. I could eat, very easy-to-swallow high-calorie food. There's nothing stopping me from doing that, or anybody with a band. You just can do that. But emotionally and spiritually, you have to be fit and think about changing your body, changing to a state where you're going to work towards something. So I had set a goal. I signed up for a 5K, and I ran that last Saturday.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, now I'm hoping. I'm 58 years old, and on my bucket list before I hit 60, I want to do a sprint triathlon, and I'm going for it.
You go, Margaret. That's great. Let me get Thomas Wadden back in on the conversation, because I think Margaret made a very important point, which is that it's not just a matter of limiting the amount of food, because as she said, you could eat, tiny pieces of cake, and what have you gotten out of this surgery? It's really thinking beyond that.
Right. The band is really going to be a support to your efforts to change your diet and to reduce your calorie intake. And Margaret's absolutely correct. You could have milkshakes all day long. You can drink soda. So there are ways that you can defeat the band, whether it's through liquid calories, which are the easiest, or just eating too much food consistently, sort of stretching out the pouch. Margaret, congratulations to you on your decision to try to take control of your weight and your health, and to helping others potentially want to do so as well. Margaret has had an unusual circumstance of having a gastric bypass first and then having a lap band. Usually it goes the other direction. You'll have a lap band first, you'll lose a certain amount of weight, the lap band won't produce as much as you want, then people will go to the more aggressive procedure. So Margaret, I do hope that you're going to get the benefit that you want from the lap band, and congratulations on losing 180 pounds. The trouble with losing with these procedures is people never get to the weight they want to, because once you've gotten to be severely obese, you're going to have excess fat cell number. Mm. So a person of average weight has 35 billion fat cells. Once you get to a BMI of 40, 50 or so, you're going to have 100 billion fat cells. Those cells are always going to have some lipid in them. So you can shrink them down, but you can't get rid of them. So that's the paradox. Even though you feel like you're eating next to nothing, you still can't get to your, quote, ideal weight, or you can get there, but it's just for a few hours. You start regaining very quickly.
Well, Margaret, even going back to your piece, and you describe having the gastric bypass surgery and that actually you lost 100 pounds without even having to work very hard at it. And it sounds like with this lap band procedure, it's a little harder work for you. Would that be a fair assessment?
Well, you know, I think that it's just about making choices. And one of the tools that I used, I had gotten before the surgery, I got the Beck Diet Solution by Judith Beck, and it's about cognitive therapy and changing, you know, understanding more about obesity and about why I am an obese person. So that was very helpful to me and almost talked me out of having the surgery.
Because you can sort of talk to yourself in a way, right?
You really need to reinforce within yourself, within my mind. I need to reinforce that I can be a healthy person. You know, I was shocked recently. I went for a swim at a pool, and as I saw the lines going by, I thought for a second, oh my God, I'm an athlete. And I never thought in my life of myself as an athlete. And most obese people just don't think of themselves that they can be an athlete. And you have to change that mindset. You have to change your mindset that, you know, you can't do that, because most people are telling themselves very negative things about their body image. And, you know, I think that as long as I can keep in a mental positive state, reinforce myself with good thoughts rather than bad thoughts, I'll continue. And I've already hit past, since the lap band, I've lost 51 pounds.
So
I've
great.
Passed that point, you know, and I'm going to keep going. This is, you know, this is not about, you know, the lap band anymore. This is about me, calories, and moving. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, you have to move, you have to eat less, and then you lose weight. Whether you have any other interventions going on, those things still have to happen. You have to have less calories, more movement, and then you lose weight.
And I have to say, Thomas Wadden is nodding his head there. Go ahead.
Well, you just bring up so many good points, and one that is so clear is that you are very active in this process of trying to control your weight. You're not expecting that the lap band or the surgery are just going to do it for you, leave the driving to those procedures. You've decided very clearly you're going to increase your physical activity. You're going to try to eat healthier foods. I assume you're eating more fruits and vegetables, foods with, you know, fewer calories, more volume of food. And I really like your thought that you can be an athlete. Some people, I think, at 300, 400 pounds maybe don't feel like they can be athletes, but at least they can be active. You can be active in any weight, and as you move forward, you will become more active and more of an athlete.
And, Margaret, we have to say goodbye to you, but I'm just curious, what has been the response to your article?
It was interesting because I got very little response, my coworkers were shocked. My brothers were laughed, and because I hadn't told them. I told my sisters, but not my brothers. So people really think that it's incredibly brave to put it out there, and I did it as a service to other people, and hopefully it will help other people. I don't think that people are comfortable talking about their weight, but I'm just...
Well, you did your job, and I have to say we found you because we were on the Internet, and we found your piece in the Asbury Park Press. Margaret Bonifide, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio
Times.
Thank you. And good luck to you as well. And stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thomas Jefferson University's School of Population Health supports WHYY and offers a fully accredited master's degree in public health. An open house will be held on Wednesday, May 15th in the school's offices on the 10th floor of 901 Walnut Street. Registration by phone 215-503-0174 or online at jefferson.edu/openhouse. The Thomas Jefferson University School of Population Health, bringing health and healthcare together.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Robert Caro talks about the fourth volume of his biography of Lyndon Johnson, covering the years 1958 to 1964. He describes the animosity between Johnson and Robert Kennedy this way.
Did you ever see two strange dogs come into a room, and all of a sudden they growl and the hair rises on the back of the neck?
Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Odds that a couple will celebrate their 20th wedding anniversary is about 50-50. Not very good news for young couples ready to say I do in this season of spring nuptials. While education, compatibility, stress, and money can pull marriages apart, some marriages are strengthened as issues are negotiated. On the next Voices in the Family with Dan Gottlieb, Divorce Prevention 101. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
Today in Radio Times, why is it so hard to lose weight? I'm Marty Moscoe, talking with Thomas Wadden, the Albert J. Stunkard Professor of Psychology and Director of the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We've been spending most of the hour talking about lap band surgery or gastric surgery. But let me broaden our conversation, if we could, Thomas Wadden, which is, as we know, there's an obesity epidemic in this country. So many people are on diets. They gain weight. They lose weight. They have all the best intentions. Yet it seems like it's so hard to lose weight. I don't know if it's this country or just in today's world.
All developed nations, all industrialized nations are having trouble with their waistlines. So we are not alone with it. We are one of the fattest nations in the world, but we're not alone with it. And it's really a problem that has arisen with nobody's intentionally trying to create the problem. If you think about it, when we were an agrarian society, 95% of people were living on farms. They were working on farms. You had to expend energy in order to eat. So you weren't going to get to be fat living on a farm, working 8, 12 hours a day on the farm. Then we moved to an industrial economy. People continued to engage in physical activity. But then over time, we went to being a service economy, and now we're an information economy. Never have we communicated at such swift speeds. Mm-hmm. Never have our thoughts and ideas floated around, but our bodies don't move at all.
Because we're in front of our computers all
correct.
Day, right?
I'm sure you've had the experience I do, that you just email people in your office rather than getting up to walk down. So we're expending 200, 300, 400 calories fewer per day now than we were in just 1900, 1950. So that's a big problem on the one side, less physical activity. Mm. On the other side is that it's impossible not to be asked, aren't you hungry? Wouldn't you like a treat? Don't you want to indulge your appetite, your taste buds? So there's just an incredible opportunity to eat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can find places to eat right on your block. You can call the pizza delivery person. And I particularly feel bad for our children who see 5,000 to 10,000 ads per year for sugar-sweetened cereals, sugar-sweetened beverages. So the rule has become now that you should think about eating at all times of the day, not for nutritional needs, but for recreational purposes, for pleasure. It's just changed in terms of what it means to need to eat.
And but going back to the basics, it's still input output. It's like how many calories is, and it, is it all about calories?
It's all about calories in terms of weight control. So a calorie is a calorie, whether it's coming from fat, from carbohydrate, from protein. And it is the basics. So the biggest problem has been since we are less physically active, we have to eat less food to meet the fact that we're burning fewer calories. So that's making everybody a restrained eater. Everyone is constantly sort of quietly thinking about how much did I eat at the last meal, how many calories do I have left. Right. So we're all restricting our intake. That's why it's important, if you can, to increase your physical activity so you can eat more. More importantly, you increase your cardiovascular health, your heart health. So that's important as well. And I think that what people are going to find is that over time it's going to be more of a problem just because as our smartphones take over more activities for us, you can now walk into the room, don't even have to turn on your stereo, your sound system, the lights, you can just punch it up on the smartphone, you've saved a few more calories. So it's going to be a real energy crisis for us as we move forward and more of our daily functions are taken over by electronic devices.
But meanwhile, we have these gigantic plates, you know, you go to the movies to get a small small, so then it's about, you know, 12 inches high.
Well, that's
20
right.
inches high.
That's exactly right. So there's always been this value proposition that if you're getting more food, you're getting a bargain. And as I've said to colleagues before, we've really just had a sale on obesity for the past two decades, past three decades. And too many Americans have taken benefit of the sale on obesity, where you can get a two-liter bottle of soda for 99 cents, whereas the can is going to cost you, you know, 50, 75 cents. The 20-ounce serving, which is still too big, is a dollar and a quarter. So the larger the amount you get, the less you pay for it, and we think that's a value. So that's what makes dieting an unfair fight, is that you've got a person who's got the best intentions, wants to lose weight, but they're just being implored to eat more all the time, and companies are spending just billions of dollars a year encouraging you to eat. And that's what is going to eventually change in our society. We're gonna make companies that are encouraging us to eat all this extra food pay for the hidden cost of the food. And the hidden cost of the food is the healthcare dollars we're going to spend on obesity. Right now, obesity costs us about $100 billion per year in direct medical cost. Then there's an additional $100 billion a year in loss, indirect costs from lost productivity. So as you get heavier, you are less likely to be able to perform your job as well. You're going to have more sick days. You're going to have more hospitalizations, sick visits. That's going to detract from the economy in terms of being productive. So this is going to be an economic problem that will be, I think, addressed ultimately with economic solutions.
Well, let me get to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY, talking about our calorie-rich environment and why it's so hard to lose weight. Let me see what Walter from West Philadelphia has to say. Walter, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for having this discussion.
Sure.
I think it's really important. In the past 2 years, I mean, I've struggled with weight loss my entire life. In the past 2 years, I've lost 50 pounds.
Wow.
And I still have a lot more to lose. But the most effective thing that I've found is, as your guest was just saying, reducing intake, eating less. There are a lot of health benefits for me for getting more active, but really for weight loss, eating less is important. And to me, the other thing is I hear this discussion of, of the gastric bypass and surgeries. And for me, it's been a struggle for 2 years doing this hard work to lose weight. And that was never an option for me. That was never on the table. A lot of people talk about Chris Christie as a tough guy. I don't think that taking the easy way out makes him a tough guy. I mean, it's a good thing to address this issue because all people are struggling with it, and obviously the weight he's at now is not sustainable if he wants to live a long life. But for me, that wasn't on the table, so I had to actually do the hard thing, which I struggle with every day,
sure,
which is eating less and walking more and getting more active. And I'm just glad they're having this discussion.
Well, me too, Walter. And I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me ask you, though, Thomas Wadden, is having this surgery, is that taking the easy way out, as Walter was saying?
I don't think it's taking the easy way out. I think everyone who ends up having surgery has tried to lose weight repeatedly using traditional diet and exercise. Some people are going to use weight loss medications. I think that surgery ends up being the end of the line, that you feel like you've tried all other approaches, you've exhausted them. You may have been successful. And, Walter, I do congratulate you on losing 50 pounds. That's a dramatic achievement. And ultimately, I think people need to use the procedures that are available to them to help them achieve the health that they want and need to get. If I could just ask Walter,
yes,
how have you gone about reducing your portion sizes, eating less?
I've been using smartphone apps to track my calorie intake.
Great.
Super.
And I've found that if I don't track, I eat too much. And if you don't keep track, as what you were saying, I work at a computer. I have a lot lower activity level. It asks you questions when you start off, and I found out that my lifestyle was sedentary.
Right. Yep.
And I had put it in as lightly active, and I was nowhere near lightly active.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Well, congratulations.
And, yeah, Walter, no.
And your other, just one quick thing, your previous guest said about changing ideas about body image and everything. It's very true. Like, I've always seen myself as a big guy, but it's kind of seeing yourself through a new new lens, seeing possibility, and she was dead on with a lot of that stuff.
Walter, I appreciate the call, and good luck to you as well. It's quite an accomplishment, as Thomas Wadden was saying, to lose 50 pounds. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me just circle back to something that Chris Christie had said, which was that until he was in his 20s, you know, he could pretty much keep his weight in line. And I think that's true for a lot of people. But then he said, you know, I stopped playing sports. I stopped doing all the things that had kept me active. And then, lo and behold, over the decades, you begin to gain weight. Is that a pretty typical story?
It's a very typical story. I mean, the statistics are sort of grim, but the average female is going to gain about 25 to 30 pounds from the time she leaves high school. The average male is going to gain about 20 to 25 pounds from the time he leaves high school. So much it is just decreases in your physical activity. Big factor there.
But do people's metabolism change as they get older as well?
It does, because you start to lose your muscle mass, and as you lose your muscle mass, your resting metabolic rate, your metabolism does decrease, since your resting metabolic rate, the number of calories you burn at rest, is a function of how much muscle tissue you have.
Let me see what looks like Sheila from South Jersey. No, we don't have Sheila. Okay, sorry. We will get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. But can you be overweight and healthy?
Oh, for sure. There's no question about it. Some individuals are going to be overweight and healthy because they carry their weight in their lower body. So if you look at females in particular, they tend to carry their weight in their hips, buttocks, and thighs, and that weight is not damaging to your health as is the weight carried in the upper body, sort of the pear-shaped figure versus the apple-shaped figure. You also can be overweight, obese, but exercising regularly, and the physical activity will reduce some of the risk of your excess weight. Not necessarily to zero, but it definitely will attenuate some of the risks that you have. So exercise is extremely important, first and foremost, for improving your heart health. Exercise does not really burn as many calories as most people think. If you want to lose a pound on the scale, you'd have to walk 35 miles to lose a pound. Alternatively, you can cut back 500 calories a day, and to lose that pound, it takes you 1 week. You're going to have a 3,500-calorie deficit to get there. So exercise is far harder for weight loss. It is absolutely critical for keeping weight off. One of the most frustrating things is once you've lost weight, your body goes green on you. Your body burns fewer calories walking a mile after you've lost 10% of your weight than it did before. And that's even when you control for the fact you're a smaller person. It is just much more energy efficient. It can't tell the difference between you lost weight because you wanted to versus you lost weight because you're being starved.
Interesting. Let me try Sheila from South Jersey. Sheila, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank
there.
You so much for taking my
you're
call.
Welcome.
The question I have is with Governor Christie, I feel as though the emphasis is on the quantity and not necessarily the content. So what if he reduces his quantity but doesn't change what he's eating? And we all know from the news and David Letterman that he likes his donuts and he likes his fatty foods and whatnot. So to reduce an unhealthy food substance, wouldn't it be better, as the previous caller had said, she was not given nutritional training because she was not diabetic or pre-diabetic. And I think that emphasis needs to be there, that support needs to be there. And if Governor Christie at some point can change his mind, has a mind shift and eats more healthy foods, wouldn't that also have a greater impact and possibly lose more than 20% of his body, weight?
Sure, Sheila, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, Thomas.
Sure. Well, you would like to have everybody improving the quality of the diet, and by that meaning eating more plant foods, so more fruits and vegetables, which are going to fill you up and provide fewer calories. Clearly, you cannot effectively manage your weight eating ice cream and potato chips and donuts all the time. You could maintain your weight, but you'd have to eat very small portions of those things, in which case you're not going to get enough protein and vitamins and minerals that you want. So ultimately, you're best off eating a diet that allows you to eat a lot of food, which comes with fruits and vegetables, the old tried and true advice. You can have some sweets and treats, but you've got to limit those because they have so many calories per unit of serving to them.
Is there fat prejudice out there?
Oh, there's just so much fat prejudice. I must say that in some ways, my heart goes out to Governor Christie that he has to lose weight under a microscope.
Yes, with everybody watching.
Everybody watching. It's every dieter's nightmare to decide that you're going to try to do something about your weight. You've tried previously. You've failed. It took a lot of courage to think, I'm going to try again. And now you have to do it in full view of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. And dieters always carry excess weight, but they carry a legacy of shame, failure, and a sense of, like, I bet you I'm just not going to be successful again. Yeah. So it's always a threat to people's self-esteem to do so. There's so much prejudice against overweight people. I think you've heard it said before that prejudice against obese people is the last socially acceptable prejudice in America. People are still making fat jokes, as we've already heard around Governor Christie. And that is just painful again. You know, people should be judged on the basis of their performance. When you think about at work, does weight have any place in deciding somebody's competence? It shouldn't. It should be whether they can do the job or not, not what their weight is in that regard.
About a minute before we have to say goodbye, what, though, do you advise to doctors who have patients and are working with their patients to help them lose weight?
Well, the most important thing is to start a discussion in a respectful fashion. And so instead of saying, you know, I think you need to lose some weight, right, take off a few pounds, if you don't, you're going to be in trouble, say, maybe, could we talk about your weight today? What are your thoughts about your weight? What effect does your weight have upon your health, do you think? What effect does your weight have upon your day-to-day functioning? Are you interested in changing your weight? What are your goals for your weight right now? So a respectful discussion would be a good start to it.
And underscoring the word respectful?
Respectful, yes. Because doctors do have a lot of prejudice against obese individuals, as does the public at large. I don't know that doctors necessarily discriminate against obese people. I don't think they withhold procedures or advice, but I think that a doctor can make a pejorative comment about someone's weight, and that makes that patient less likely to want to come back and get follow-up care.
Well, Thomas Wadden, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank
Radio
you.
Times.
It's a pleasure.
A pleasure for us as well. Director of the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also the Albert J. Stunkard Professor of Psychology at Penn. We also spoke with Margaret Bonafide, a multimedia journalist with the Asbury Park Press, and began our conversation with Matt Katz, staff writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out many, many things about this program. We took some pictures and have posted them on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times, but stay with us. We'll be right back.